This is an interview with Charles T. Wilson, the superintendent of Chaco Cultural National Historical Park, who now divides his residency between Cortez, Colorado and Chaco Canyon. Growing up in the Four Corners area has had a significant role in the shaping of Mr. Wilson's career within the National Park Service. This interview is being conducted on December 12, 1993 at Mr. Wilson's home in Cortez, Colorado. The interviewer is Philip Wilson, representing the Center of Southwest Studies, Fort Lewis College, Durango, Colorado. Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Good morning.
I'd like to first off thank you for allowing me this opportunity to interview you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, the first question is, could you tell me something about your early childhood here in the Southwest?
Early childhood, I'm not sure I can remember back that far. But the Southwest to me, just to define it real quick, to me, the Southwest is everything east of California, west of the Continental Divide, and south of Grand Junction, Colorado. And I suppose you could stop somewhere around the Mexican border. But that's the Southwest to me. It's a wonderful place. Wide open spaces, good weather generally. You can drive for miles and miles, at least you used to, without seeing too much traffic or too many people. And you could actually find a place where you can wander around by yourself. So that did shape my childhood quite a bit, because that's primarily where I was raised. I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a long time ago. Seems like a long time ago. My parents were people from Texas, generally, and had kind of moved with the jobs into New Mexico. And at the time that my mother and father got married, he lived in Mountain Air, New Mexico. They both did, which at that time was going through a bean boom. It was a big pinto bean growing area. My father and his mother ran a cafe in downtown Mountain Air, which I think might have had four or five stores altogether. Pretty small place. They were married there. My brother and my sister were both born there. They're a lot older than I am. And then things kind of went bust. My dad got into the trucking business, which cost him a lot of money and wasn't successful. So he had to actually got thrown in jail for a while in the county jail there for writing hot checks, which actually, according to my mother, was just a big misunderstanding. And we had to move then to Albuquerque, where Dad got a job as a night watchman and working for the railroad and did a lot of different things. But I was born in the old Presbyterian Hospital in Albuquerque, and we stayed there for till I think I was 3 or 4 years old, and I don't remember much about that time of my life. But now we moved to Cortez, Colorado, and like a lot of families in the Southwest, there were always one group of the family would move and go find a pretty good job someplace, and the word would get back to the other members of the family who may or may not have been doing as well. So pretty soon they'd kind of trickle up there, and you'd have the whole extended family living around the same area. Generally, that's what happened to us. My uncle moved up, became the manager of the Bean House, Pinto Bean House in Areola, Colorado, and then his brother followed him, and then my mother followed up with my dad. My mother, bless her heart, had done a very wise thing, we all felt, that she went up and she bought an 80-acre ranch farm at Areola for $1,500 in a tax sale. Rode the train to Denver all by herself, and I think I was with her, and stood in line there and bid on that farm and got it. So it was pretty brave of her, being a Texas woman. They were generally protected and kept quiet most of the time. She did a good thing there. So we moved onto that ranch, which had a tar paper house. It had, I think, had a one bedroom and a back porch. And me and my brother and sister, we slept on the back porch. Mom and Dad had the main bedroom. And we had an old wood stove to heat the place. But it was a great time. We had a beautiful apple orchard. And that's what kind of started shaping my like for the outdoors, doing things outside, having an area where you had maybe a house and nobody else around for 3 or 4 miles. That was my idea of a good thing. Climbing up in the trees, in the apple trees, and haystacks, and kind of getting in on the harvest, those kind of things stayed with me. for quite a while. Then, unfortunately, in 51 or 52, I don't really recall. I remember I was in the second grade, and we all looked out the schoolhouse, which was only a mile away from my house. There at Areola, the old Areola schoolhouse. Saw this big pillar of smoke, and we wondered what it was. Well, let's see now, is it the Bishop's Haystack? Or was it Neal's? Well, it turned out to be our house. Burned completely to the ground. Old tar paper shack had burned really fast. Burned up every heirloom we ever had. All the things, pictures, all that stuff, you know, that you always have gathered up and haul around with you. So we lost quite a bit of family history there, and it was a big shock to all of us. So Dad had already moved back to Albuquerque, though, because we weren't making it there financially, which seemed to be our fate in most of our business adventures or any kind of thing. We just weren't making it. So we moved back to Albuquerque, got a job with the railroad, and Mom and I and my sister and brother followed him after the house burned down. And we moved into Albuquerque again, where I spent the next 9 years or so growing up in that area. But even then, even in Albuquerque, which was a small city, really, 80,000 people at the time, I think, it was kind of a wide open spaces, a lot of Hispanics, and that's who most of the people I played with were Hispanic. And most of the white folks, I think we were a little poorer than most white folks, they kind of lived up in the Heights and in other places. But we did move into a mostly white neighborhood, I think it was behind the Manal School. And right along that highway there, which bordered Manal School and our property, it was wide open spaces. I think there was only a gravel pit and a cement making thing, and then the rest of it was just wide open all the way to the Sandias. So that's where I spent most of my time. I had a bow and arrow and a spear, and we tortured lizards quite often. And we had big floods in the spring and the fall whenever we had big rains. And that was always a big adventure, go out and watch the water roar by. Lots and lots of hop toads, little desert toads. And the area around there then, there wasn't much pavement. Everything was dirt road then. And it was just a kind of a country urban scene more than anything else. So it was a good thing then. Got used to the desert. It was all desert around there, of course. Of course, Albuquerque's not a pretty city, nor is it a pretty area, nor is the dirt and the rocks there really something that you fall in love with. So when we moved to Cortez, Colorado eventually, it didn't really bother me that much that I went. But we stayed there for quite a while. Let's see. My dad had a job at the Idle Manufacturing Company, which was an ironworks. And my mother worked at various odd jobs, a secretary, waitress, part-time nurse, I think, and a few other things. And I just had a good carefree life. I went to Stronghurst Elementary School. Just kind of hung out. Did all the things little kids do. Climbed a lot of trees. Went downtown, used to catch the bus by myself back then, you know, when I was like 7 years old. I'd go down, catch the bus, go downtown to Albuquerque, which was a big, bustling city to me, which really wasn't. Go up to Kemo and the State and all those theaters there, watch the afternoon matinees. Ride the bus home, nobody ever think anything about it. They had the FOP swimming pool, which was a federal, you know, Fraternal Order Police swimming pool, kind of over by the river, and that's where I learned to swim, because I'd go there every day in the summertime. Had a really good time in the Southwest. Didn't really concern myself with financial problems or anything like I do now. But my mom and dad kind of got divorced, kind of, because he stayed living there with my brother in the big house that we bought there in New Mexico. And then we moved to, she moved on up to Cortez, Colorado, which in 1957 and 58, 59 was going through a big oil boom. They discovered oil over in the Neanderthal oil fields in southeastern Utah. And most of those oil field workers either stayed in Farmington, New Mexico, or Cortez, or Blanding, those places like that. And then they'd commute back and forth. So there was a lot of money suddenly injected into Cortez. And my uncle, like I said, you know, you always follow somebody, had a cafe called the Four Corners Cafe and Restaurant. My mother went up to work for him. Well, I was 13 at the time, and I just started junior high school, getting interested in gangs, because they did have gangs at that time. And I sniffed a little glue here and there, smoked some cigarettes. And that was about it as far as my early juvenile delinquenthood. Moved to Cortez, was probably pretty lucky. I was pretty undisciplined and unregulated. I was just kind of hanging out. It was a good childhood, I suppose, as long as it turned out right. And I moved to Cortez, started high school here, and I lived with my grandmother, because my mother was busy working. She kind of had a gentleman friend, and it would have been too inconvenient to have me around. Besides that, I wanted to live with my grandmother and my old Aunt Maud. And I had a pasture, and so Mom sold a farm that we bought about that time. She made one heck of a profit. She made she sold it for $15,000, which was quite a markup from the $1,500 that she originally spent for it. So we thought we were in heaven. However, just as a side note, 10 years later, it sold for $80,000. So, but you do what you do. And she was not able to take care of it. Had to pay taxes on it every year, which were going up all the time. She was a single mom, just working as a hostess in a restaurant for my uncle. So the best thing she could have done was to sell that place. But I always felt it was mine. I always used to go hang out on it, shoot rabbits on it. And me and my dog had a .22, shot everything that I could see, except for the cows, of course. Might have even shot a couple of them, I'm not sure. But had a pretty carefree existence. Had my horse, old Red, which my mother bought from that farm money. He cost $100. And then about 2 years after I bought him, we bought a saddle for him. So did most of my riding bareback. And being on that horse with the dog, 22, was just probably the best existence I could think of. In fact, I wished I was doing that today. But it wasn't to be. I had some friends who lived in various farms, some of them all about the same kind of income level as I was. Parents were just kind of renting places and trying to make a farm, and their dad would work in town. Those kind of things were generally the norm around there. You'd have mom stayed at home. She kind of had some chickens, and she'd have turkeys. This is in general. And maybe a pig. And dad would work in town. He'd come through chores at night, and they'd have a sort of a combination kind of existence, because you couldn't farm on such a small budget and still make it. So dad had to work. Maybe, and quite often, mom had to work to make ends meet. Cortez never grew as fast as, say, Farmington, Durango. Durango had the college and the railroad. And for some reason, people liked Durango better, even though it's probably the coldest place in the United States that I know of. But Cortez kind of grew slowly. People were reluctant to sell their farms and subdivide them too fast. And that's still true today, even though the population, it looks like the subdivisions are going in all over the place. It's still a pretty slow growth compared to other areas. I learned to dislike Californians when I was growing up, because Californians were just a bunch of dope heads and hot rodders. Didn't care much for Arizonans. New Mexico, I never told anybody I was from New Mexico too often, because no respect for New Mexicans. And we didn't like people from the western slope, or the eastern slope, Rockies, because they were raw water-stealing shysters. And they were all part of Kansas. So just our little world here in the Four Corners area. We hung out in them sandstone canyons that are near Cortez. And shot rabbits, chicken, anything you could think of. Burned pack rat nests, just destructive little kids running around out there, but they had a wonderful time. Fishing, doing all the things that Tom Sawyer did. And it was just a great time. I suppose you could say that how it shaped my life today is the fact that I knew that I had to do something that was at least mostly outdoors or something. Even though now the job I have is a bureaucrat in an office quite often, I still have the opportunity to be outside and do the things and see the scenery. Because it just knowing the scenery's out there, helps me. But It made me be a park ranger. I started out in the Forest Service, worked as a sawyer, and that was just a summer job, so I knew I had to find a permanent job. So finally, after graduating from college, I found a permanent job in the Park Service, which was something that I aimed for, that I wanted really bad, was to be in the Park Service. As a park ranger, not as anybody else, but I wanted to be a park ranger. Because they have the opportunity to be out more. So growing up in that atmosphere of being out, running around on horses, shooting and guns, and fishing, all those kind of things aimed me toward a ranger life. And that's why I'm a ranger today.
Mr. Wilson, how exactly did you get involved in the Park Service, and what made you decide to stay with it?
Well, like I said, you know, I aimed for the Park Service, or aimed for a life like a ranger. You know, I could have been a game warden, or all those things that people, when they sit in their city, big city apartments, you know, they think, you know, I'd go be a game warden and stuff. Well, I aimed for that. I did a lot of different things, like everybody does. I worked in the filling station. When I was going to college, I worked in the filling station. I learned how to... I worked in the volume tire business. I worked at the 7-Eleven store, which is the most hated job I think I've ever had, next to when I was managing the Shakey's Pizza over in Durango for a few months. It went broke finally, but it wasn't my fault. But I did a lot of those kind of jobs that people do, and I looked at the career opportunities, and I even actually considered being a manager of a 7-Eleven store, and the company that hired me as a seasonal sort of part-time manager actually hustled me to come on board with them. But I didn't do that until I went broke, and then I decided it was a pretty good idea after all and tried to get back on, but by that time they didn't want me. But I worked for the Forest Service, and that was only a seasonal job, and the Forest Service seemed to have some dead-end positions. In other words, if I worked for the Forest Service all my life, you know, I would probably still be at the mid-level technician series thing. So I knew that something I had to do, I had to get the sheepskin degree. So like a lot of kids in my position who, one, didn't do too well in English, math. Well, I actually didn't do well in high school at all. I'm not sure why I graduated, actually, from Cortez High, or actually Montezuma County High back in 1961, was I decided to go to school. But first, I went off to the Army and matured quite a bit while I was in the Army. And then I came back, got married to my present wife, Carol. And we had a young son. And I knew that I couldn't provide for them really in the way I wanted to, you know, and have the things that I wanted to have without going to college. So I determined I was going to get my four-year degree. Now, I'd already been over to Fort Lewis. In fact, I was in the first class of the trimester era. We were the kind of an experimental class. Dr. Robert W. Delaney was the class sponsor or whatever, and there was about 10 or 15 of us, I think, that went over and spent the summer going to school, which I definitely hated. I was just right out of high school. I was 17 years old at the time. I just discovered women, horses, alcohol, and all the things that teenagers discover, and didn't want to go to school. So naturally, I flunked everything except I think I actually might have made a D in history that first trimester. And by the way, that trimester was a good experience for me because it made me want to go back to school, made me become familiar with it, knowing that it wasn't going to hurt me, unlike a lot of other kids I was running around with. But it did hurt me in the long run because my grade point average was always affected by those really crappy grades I made during that time. But I didn't go. I went that fall too, I think, back to Fort Lewis and decided that it wasn't for me yet because I simply wasn't paying attention. I was partying too much and immature. Wasn't a thing to do. So I dropped out. I worked in a uranium mine up in near Moab, Utah for a while, near Church Rock. You turn off and you go about 6 or 7 miles due east of Church Rock there, just out of Monticello. You run across an old uranium mine that I used to work in. And it was quite an adventure. I used to tell my girlfriends I was sterile because I worked in a uranium mine. They never believed that. But it was a good work experience. And then my father passed away, and I got some money from him, and I bought myself a black Buick convertible, cowboy hat. I feel, because I was a horseman, I had been experienced. Still had my horse, as a matter of fact. And proceeded to party down, pretty much. And we could, a lot of alcohol, running around 100 miles an hour in an old Buick. Just did the fun stuff. And you, I'm sure everybody here knows what fun stuff can be when you're growing up. Stealing gas from the farmers that I used to work for out on the bean farms. Shooting deer out of season. You know, all those kind of things. We were pretty carefree back then. I knew all the roads, the back roads. We just had a great time. But Vietnam was going on full blast that time. The Army and the Armed Services were looking for a few good men. And my mother was absolutely sick of me. I'd been not in jail, but been real close. I'd lost my driver's license for drag racing. And then I got it back and lost it again for driving without it. I mean, it was just one thing after another. I was heading down the bad road. So I got drafted. My mother breathed a big sigh of relief, although they were concerned I might get shot over in Vietnam. But while in the Army, lo and behold, I got a couple of good jobs. I was a Pershing missile warhead crewman, which was something normally draftees don't get into that. I guess it was, I did good on my entrance exams or whatever they take there in the Army. They could tell the difference between a battery and a pair of pliers, I think is their test. Anyhow, they put me in that. I did that for, I was trained in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Pershing missile battery there. And prior to that, I had taken basic in Fort Polk, Louisiana, which introduced me to a new area, my first airplane ride, and the fact I knew that I didn't want to live anywhere near Louisiana. And down in that, where the chiggers got me and the skeeters got me, it was a terrible place. But I know a lot of people love it. In fact, I've been back there lately and eaten some crawdads. I think it's a wonderful place. But frankly, it's not my it's not my place. So I got back to Fort Sill, went through the Pershing Missile course, and lo and behold, we had to go out to Hanksville, Utah, and put on a support battery for the Germans who were come over and practice shooting off Pershing missiles at the Russians. And so I got to come out, because I was from the country and knew the roads, I got to come in the advance party. So that just reinforced my desire to come back here and be in the Southwest and probably not want to go too far from it unless I had to. So I did that. I went to the Army, then I went to Vietnam for a while, which introduced me to sand and bullets and all the things that go along with going to Vietnam. And first dead bodies, you know, all those things that make a man out of you, I suppose, or make you grow up at least. Got out of the Army in 1967, fooled around, took up the partying scene again. Got tired of it though. Decided to go back to school, got married, decided to go back to school, and I actually made it out with a degree in American history and some archaeology. And what I really liked about archaeology of the Southwest, I took it from Dr. Ives, I think was his name, a big bombastic type of guy who was very egotistical and like a lot of archaeologists I've met since then, and they know everything there is to know about everything. Especially when it comes to archaeology in the Southwest and what happened in good old Anasazi. But got out of school, needed a summer job, you know, and so kind of fell into the Park Service, but then I realized that was the place for me. What happened was I worked for the Forest Service as a sawyer for a couple of years, and then they weren't hiring again. Actually, I had a disagreement with the district ranger on the, what they call the Glade District here in Cortez, and it's now the Dolores District, a part of it. And I had a falling out with him and another guy I was working with. And they didn't hire me back, so I kind of got fired from the Forest Service. So naturally, as soon as the Park Service heard that somebody got fired from the Forest Service, they picked me right up, made a ranger out of me. So I really didn't know much about the Park Service at all. I knew that Mesa Verde was up there, and after I'd taken archaeology Southwest, knew what it was all about, the classic Mesa Verde sites and so on. Read a book on Wetherill Brothers and kind of actually felt sorry for the Wetherill brothers and kind of became familiar with them, Al Clayton, John Winslow, Richard, and the cousin. But went up to Mesa Verde. I got my first flat hat. And I was living in a little house there in Cortez. My wife took a picture of me standing there in my uniform. My shirt was about four times too big with the hat. But brand new experience. I liked it for some reason. Went up and gave tours through the Cliff Dwellings and learned a lot about public speaking. Became very good at it. And became a popular guy. Carol came up and she started working for the History Association, and we kind of as a family grew into the Park Service. We decided that was a place for us. So basically that's how I got into the Park Service, kind of an accident. And then after I got into it, I realized this is the place for me, because you could still do the things you want to do. You go out and talk to people. I like to talk to people. And I could be outdoors once in a while by myself quite often. During that time, my college years, when I was sort of loose as far as the job's concerned, had a good friend who worked with the Forest Service with me, Gary Apple, and we spent a lot of time just exploring the canyons, especially of the McElmo Canyon tributaries, Yellow Jacket, Sand Canyon, and those, an old Jeep with my kid, and my wife. We did a lot of stuff. Generally, though, the erosion was taking place so severely in Yellow Jacket Canyon, for example, that the 4 years I was going to college, when I went down the road off Goodman Point, there was a big cliff dwelling that washed away right before our eyes. Over, it took about 3 years, but it was completely gone. Big kivas. The erosion had dug down at least 30 feet, and it was just an incredible... You couldn't salvage anything, I don't think. There would have to have been a major expedition by some CU or some big college group to salvage all the damage that that flood did, or that erosion did over those years. We're still doing it. So we found Yellow Jacket Canyon was a very wonderful place because it had a little bit of red rocks at the bottom of it. And as you climb up out of some of those trails, you had lots of Indian ruins. And we were down there alone mostly. Wander around and just be part of the scenery. It was very nice. So we did a lot of that, and that helped. Especially because I became more familiar with the Anasazi culture and Indians of the Southwest in general, due to my being in history and taking archaeology and being at Mesa Verde and having all those questions asked, like, how many undiscovered cliff dwellings are there? 610, I would always say. But those, it helped shape the fact that I definitely didn't want to do anything else. But getting into the Park Service was hard to do. You don't just walk into the Park Service. Took a long time. I put myself on some technician registers at the time. Because I was a veteran, I got a little bit of extra boost and was on top of the list. And I got a job offer from Petrified Forest. And I was going through some personal problems at the time, so I went down there and looked at it, and there wasn't a tree around Petrified Forest. And it was in February when I was offered the job, and so my friend Gary and I went down to look at the place. It looked pretty sad, so I didn't take it. Went through a whole summer of working at Shakey's Pizza and doing in the 7-Eleven store and all those kind of fun jobs that a guy can get into. I decided Petrified Forest was looking pretty good to me, so when they made another offer, I took it. Immediately, Carol and I moved to Petrified Forest, and it was a big traumatic move for us because we had been such a part of Cortez and Mesa Verde that we really hated to leave it and knew that there was no future for us except to move. So we did, and it was the best decision I made ever. So there I was, Petrified Forest. I took entrance fees at the gate, but the rest of the time I was... they put me on horse patrol. I was able to wander around on the horse over that area. And had a good time at Petrified Forest. And it kind of grew on me. I realized that the desert kind of brought me back to the old no-tree Albuquerque days. You know, the desert and the rocks, those kind of things. So it became a good thing. But then, money talked. So my main goal was to get promoted as soon as possible in a big park. And that's what happened after 2 years I moved to Yosemite. So that's kind of how I got into the Park Service, and why I wanted to get into it, and why I plan to stay there, and why I recommend it to just about anybody, even my son.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. That was very enlightening. Could you tell us something about some of your highlights, if you had, of your career in the Park Service? Some of your most memorable events have taken place.
Well, I had a lot of wonderful time in every park I was in. I can't think of a park I didn't like to be in. Really. The ones I've been in, I think that's six now. Petrified Forest. Well, actually, Mesa Verde had... The most memorable things I had there were just being in a campground amphitheater, 1,500 people, no TVs for them. They'd read all the books there was to read. They all arrived at the campground amphitheater waiting for this ranger, the Johnny Carson. And giving those talks were some of the most memorable things. Also, we had some big fires on Mesa Verde. Like the Moccasin Mesa Fire was one of the ones I was involved in, and one of the Wetherill Mesa Fires. And it was very